19th century British Prime Minister Sir William Gladstone once said this: "The American Constitution is, so far as I can see, the most wonderful work ever struck off at a given time by the brain and purpose of man." Well, we're going to talk about the Constitution right now with Matt Spaulding of Hillsdale College. He has, by the way, co-written a Heritage Foundation commentary on the U.S. Constitution. Matt Spaulding is the Associate Vice President and Dean for Constitutional Studies and Citizenship for the D.C. branch, the Washington, D.C. branch of Hillsdale College. This is Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb. And, Matt, it's great to have you on the program again. Thank you.
It's great to be with you again. How are you?
Good.
Always happy to be here.
I appreciate that. And before we plow into this new initiative at Hillsdale in D.C. to help Americans appreciate the Constitution more, just how about a comment about the Constitution itself, putting it in the context of history?
Well, that was a great quote you read there at the beginning. It's absolutely true. We Americans, we love to debate all these things. We're in the midst of debates right now on various constitutional questions. And, you know, sometimes we lose sight of the real significance of it. I mean, if you think over history of the great civilizations, the great cities, the great places where human liberty has thrived, this country is one of those things. I mean, you know, you think of Rome and Greece and England, America is one of those things, and it really has a lot to do, if it really is defined by the Constitution and the Declaration, but these documents, which we kind of take for granted, that the structure created by them is so crucially important to our freedom and our ability to disagree and debate and argue and have elections. Mm-hmm. We couldn't do that if we didn't have a Constitution. And that's something that I think we need to spend some time thinking about, and if we're involved in it, learning about, such that we can appreciate it and preserve it for the future. And sometimes I think we by forgetting it, we really misuse it and potentially could be in a position where we might lose it.
And I know that Hillsdale has a reputation as being a very pro traditional America, type of college, and very much appreciative of the Constitution with classes. I think there's even some classes available online, maybe even some free lectures or whatever related to the Constitution. Tell us about that.
That's right. We require every one of our undergraduates, as part of our core, to take a course on the Constitution, on the American founding of the Constitution. We also provide free online courses, which you can get at our main website, hillsdale.edu. And the centerpiece of those online courses, there are a bunch of them on different topics, but we have an online free online course called Constitution 101, which is about the history of the Constitution and the founding, and it's free to anybody who wants to watch it.
It's interesting because I've talked to some people who've gone to law school who've told me that they didn't even have any classes where they studied the Constitution. They studied judges' opinions. No, I'm serious.
Right, right.
Does that surprise you?
That doesn't surprise me at all. I constantly tell students who are interested in law school, let's think twice about that. If you want to learn about the Constitution, you don't go to law school. If you want to learn about torts and how to argue things and about what judges say, it's a good place, and there are good schools that teach that extremely well. But in general, law schools really don't teach the Constitution anymore. And indeed, one of the problems is that for a lot of Americans, I think we wrongly assume that the Constitution actually is a document for lawyers, and it's not. This is the beauty of it, the great historical importance of the Constitution. Is it's a document for citizens. It's for politics, not in the narrow partisan way we might think of, but in the general sense of how we live together as a community, how we construct our public lives together, so that we can be self-governing. And you don't need to be lawyer that out. And the law schools kind of ignore that. And I think missed the boat. And as a result, we rely too much on what judges make up rather than really understanding it as it was intended, but also as it really has always historically operated, in a way that is a self-governing document.
Now, would you agree with this assessment that basically when you look at the Constitution, you can see it was crafted by men who did not believe highly in man's nature, or let's put it this way, they recognize that men are fallen, you know, into sin and so forth, you know, the biblical doctrine that we're all sinners and so forth. But that's reflected in the sense of, well, we don't want to give too much power to any one person or any one small group of people, nor do we want the majority to abuse the minority. And let's put it this way. James Madison, who was a key architect to the Constitution, once said, all men having power ought to be distrusted. Is that a fair assessment of the Constitution?
No, and then that's also why when I speak of the Constitution or when you have here, right, you really need to have with it the Declaration. These are two sides of the same coin. The Constitution is a framework for governance, and it speaks mostly about powers, right? The legislature shall have these powers, and the executive shall have these powers, and the judiciary will have these powers. Well, but that pre-assumes, it really assumes an undergirding of that with an understanding of what we would refer to as kind of the first principles of politics, which is really something about the nature of man, what it means to be human, what do we possess in terms of our rights, where do they come from, you know, based on, you know, having, you know, endowed by our Creator. What does that mean versus government? Well, it means that government doesn't actually have any rights. It doesn't have sovereignty. We are sovereign. It means government is made up of powers. And power is something that you want to break up into smaller pieces because the accumulation of that power is tyrannical. Well, if to put it in general terms, and we can understand that as this is a very biblical point or just a general moral point of one's character, is that, you know, power when it accumulates is a great temptation to man to misuse. So yes, they had a very healthy understanding of why power needed to be divided up in a constitution, not accumulated in one place, checks and balances, separation of powers, all of those things. So it's the worldview of the Constitution, which I would say is perfectly true today as it was, you know, in 1787, and it's has been prior to that in human history. It makes certain assumptions about man's nature, both man's passions, which need to be checked, and the possibilities of man doing good and noble things. So it leaves room for that as well. But again, that's why the Constitution is not it doesn't dictate things. It leaves a lot of room for private institutions like families and churches. But it's a framework of checks and balances by which we can govern ourselves and, as a community, kind of come together through that process of legislating and executing and adjudicating, come to some sense that we, to the extent we can as human beings, imperfect as we are, a sense of justice. And I think the American Constitution is a remarkable framework for doing so, despite all of our flaws and imperfections. And that's what we should be very grateful for.
You know, I just recently finished reading a book by Ryan Lovelace called Search and Destroy. It's one of the two books about, or I guess three books now, out about Justice Kavanaugh and what happened last summer. But, you know, the Constitution says the Senate should advise and consent on the president's nominees for the high court. But Brett Kavanaugh said, you know, you guys have converted this into a search and destroy, you know, type mission. But here's a question for you. Do you think the founders ever intended the battle royales that we see when there's Supreme Court nominations, especially when it's a conservative nominee, because it seems like the left pulls out all the stops and so forth to try to sink that nominee?
I mean, generally the answer is no. I mean, on the one hand, same question could be asked for this general term of what do they mean by impeachment, right? I mean, so on the one hand, these are political questions, but they meant political in the sense that we would have a rational, reasonable conversation about these things, right? Advise consent. Should a president be removed, right? There's room in the joints of how the Constitution works for deliberative process. What they didn't mean by political is, I think, what we more often not have today, which is highly partisan, divisive, take no prisoners attitude.
Yeah.
That I think they actually feared that, which is why they actually had a lot of checks and balances. Congress can override an executive, and an executive can veto something that the courts do. We can amend the Constitution to change what the courts say. The president appoints judges. They don't appoint themselves, right? That's why you have a lot of those backs and forths, to try to reduce the negative partisanship of it. You still have party government and debates and things, but the process itself forces it to be more deliberative and thoughtful. And imperfect, but it works pretty well. It's when that process breaks down, which I think we see more often, especially as our policies become increasingly ideological, that it becomes much more difficult to have a good political process.
Mm-hmm. And I think part of the problem here is the issue of judicial activism. The left for so long has allowed, has relied on the court to basically legislate from the bench. And so because of that, that's how we have abortion on demand. That's how we have, same-sex marriage, et cetera. When a majority of people, when they had the opportunity, they voted for amendments, even in liberal states, to say, well, marriage is between one man and one woman in this state, not, any other type of arrangement. But so the left has gotten their way through judicial activism, and now, some conservatives on the court are less inclined to participate in that.
Well, yeah, but think for a moment what the kind of the underlying problem of all that is. You've given the example of judicial supremacy. Another example, would be the extent to which the modern administrative apparatus of government regulates, and Congress less and less regulates, and they turn it over to or delegate their power to agencies and things like that. What is the largest thing happening over time is the institutions of self-government. That is, the process by which we govern ourselves has been diminishing, and at the same time, those parts of the government which exist for legitimate purposes, the Supreme Court system and the judicial system, which includes the ability to declare things unconstitutional, is a legitimate function of government.
Yes.
But as the self-governing institutions have declined, those aspects which are not representative, like the Supreme Court or like the bureaucratic state, have gotten more and more power, which means we less and less govern ourselves, and it's more experts, whether they're judicial experts or regulatory experts, run more and more parts of our lives. That's a real constitutional, it's a clear constitutional development at some point really becoming a slow but meaningful constitutional crisis.
So, in effect, the essence of the Constitution is we the people.
That's right, in the largest sense of that. Now, one thing that the Constitution also recognizes, going back to your earlier reference to kind of our fallen nature, is that it's not merely populist. There are some filters there. There are
right.
checks and balances on popular opinion, too, right? It has to go through not only the House but the Senate, the way the president is elected. Courts and judges are protected from the immediate effects of popular opinion. Right, there are checks and balances there, but at the end of the day, the sovereign, which has the final say, are the American people, and you can't kind of write them out of the system, even though it sometimes it takes a while to get there. But you can't completely turn over our rule to the Supreme Court or to kind of some regulatory agency without violating the very notion of popular consent.
And that's why Article 1, which deals with the legislature, which is more closely affiliated with to the people have more access to the legislature. That's why it has so much more attention than do Articles 2, dealing with the presidency, or Article 3, dealing with the judges.
Right. It also explains why they come in that order.
Right,
the
exactly.
The legislature is closest to the people, the executive is the next, but less so, and the courts are less of the three.
So if people log on to hillsdale.edu, they can find one of your videos about the Constitution and kind of get a primer on the Constitution online through free courses. Anything else you want to say? We're basically out of time, but I appreciate this.
What we started here in Washington, D.C. is a new graduate school. So there's a graduate school here for young professionals in government to learn the very things we've been talking about here this afternoon, about how to think about our politics and our Constitution in light of in light of those principles about circumstances today. So you can learn more about that at our website as well. And also there's a Hillsdale in D.C. website as well, particularly focused on that.
Okay, hillsdale.edu for more information. Matt, thank you. Always a pleasure.
Great being with you. Thank you.
Okay, sure. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.